everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. Julie, thank you so much for joining me on Coaching Call. How are you today?
I am wonderful. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And so we got connected by Dustin, who's an incredible coach himself.
Absolutely.
He's been on a couple of my shows, actually. So when we think about connections, right, I think we all need that in our lives, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to get to know Julie, but I want to get to know little Julie. When you were a young lady running around, probably scraping your knees, you know, doing whatever, you know, you were doing when you were 5, 6, what did you see? How did you see the world? Because that's such an impressionable time.
Yeah.
When we truly, really are looking out there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I miss that time. I miss the sort of security and safety that I had, mm-hmm. in the way that I saw the world as, you know, different than you see it as an adult. In the world, right. that you see as an adult is so, so different. But I think I definitely had the optimism and the part of my personality that likes to sit back and observe and mm-hmm. watch how people connect with one another and just be connected to people. I think that's carried throughout my entire adult life as well.
Gotcha. So when we think about connections, right? You help people currently with connections.
Yeah.
Because of all you're doing. I'm not even giving away what you're doing yet. We're going to get there. Right? because we want to get to know you. Who would you say were your biggest influencers around that age?
You know, the people in my life, you know, my parents, my sister growing up, those, yeah, they were definitely the ones that taught me, you know, how to treat others and how to take care of others and just how to enjoy life.
Mm.
Yeah.
So your parents, your sister.
Yeah.
Do you recall, let's go a little older, other people outside of your family who may have impacted you?
Absolutely.
Made a difference in you?
Absolutely. I can think of a couple of teachers, you know, writing teachers, people that I was a great student, but I do this in my adult life as well. Really, really comfortable in the background. And I had a couple of teachers that kind of called me out and said, you know, you have a talent, you have something that's special. And that has stuck with me over the years. And then really, really good deep friendships that I've formed in my teen years are still with me today.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Very special.
I wish there's a couple of people who I knew as teenagers, and I wish they were in my life. I really enjoyed them, but I moved away.
Yeah. Yes. And it is so hard to maintain those friendships when you're in different spaces of life too, you know, different, you know, paths and journeys in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know what? For teenagers nowadays, they have cell phones. I didn't have one.
Absolutely.
So there was no connection that way. It wasn't like, hey, call me later or text me. It wasn't that. So for me, I didn't even know my friends' phone numbers.
Yeah.
So when I moved, and I never even thought of, hey, maybe I can call them, right? It just never occurred. I'm just like, okay, guys, I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Yeah, I'm gone.
And it was such a shame because it would have been great to have kept up with them and even see where their lives are or just, you know, who knows, right?
And who knows if those pathways may somehow connect. I had someone reach out to me on Facebook trying to reach my dad because he had sung with my dad in like a gospel choir when they were 17 years old. Of course, my dad's 70 now. So that was just incredible that he found me. I'm not quite sure how he found me, but you never know. Somehow those relationships may surface again.
Yeah, yeah, you never know. I have a friend of mine now who I didn't even know in high school. She's like, do you remember me from high school?
Wow.
And I'm like, kind of.
Yeah.
And because I was in high school, but as soon as I finished school, whether I was at a gymnastics meet or a handball meet or any other type of athletic function, right after that, I went to work.
Yeah.
So for me, I wasn't hanging out with people.
Right.
Either they saw me in school or they didn't see me after that.
Exactly.
It was my deal. But yeah, connecting with people, it's really incredible. So let's go into your getting to adulthood. Who do you think is one person? You can give me two or three, but one person that truly affected you and even in the career path that you've chosen.
I was an AmeriCorps member in college, and I truly signed up for it because you get a scholarship and you get a stipend, but it's a service organization. And the whole point is to put college students in nonprofit organizations and help strapped nonprofit organizations get, you know, some professional resources.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking for the scholarship and I was looking for the cash stipend. It was a job for me. But the executive director of the foundation or the nonprofit that I worked for definitely, I think, influenced me choosing to always stay in the nonprofit space. So when I do my coaching now, I either coach nonprofit leaders or professionals like me that support nonprofits. So I'm always in that space. And I've worked in that space for 20 years as well.
Wow.
And there was just something about, her name was Karen Points. And she had founded the agency that I worked at.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just her life. You know, her life was about solving a problem in the community. And she created an agency to meet a need. And, you know, I don't think I ever considered not working in a nonprofit after that. That's like, you know, I have talents, I have skills, but I want them to be in this space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gotcha. So nonprofits, 20 years.
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot of time spending in a certain community, if you will, right?
Yeah.
And what benefit did you get out of working for nonprofits?
You know, I talk a lot in my coaching now about finding your purpose. And I think there's an added benefit when you're in a nonprofit space and you're serving a need that you think is really important. It connects you to your purpose a little more rather than if it's just, you know, a dollar generated business where, you know, the profit is the goal. Right. So I think for me personally, it helped me have a sense of purpose and a sense of contribution, even though it was how I was making a living as well. There was still that deeper satisfaction.
Very cool. What would you say is one of the major lessons you learned in 20 years? I'm sure you learned a lot, right? But what's one lesson that you go, man, I am so grateful for this?
So my nonprofit career started in a public library setting. And I moved into a university setting after that. And I think something I'm grateful for from that time is just seeing people make a difference, just seeing people who are passionate about what they do actually have an impact in the world around them. And for the opposite reason, I actually started my consulting practice because of some of the challenges I saw in the nonprofit space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I thought we need some help here. There's some opportunity here to take these professionals that are in this space and really help them grow as well. But I think just seeing people make a difference and knowing that it happens and it's out there.
Do you feel like there was a void and that's why you needed to start your nonprofit?
Yeah, I do. No. I do. Especially the Dare to Lead work that I do, which is based on Dr. Brené Brown's work. Mm-hmm. Her work is about courage building. And when you're in a nonprofit space, you're typically stewarding resources from one community. You know, you're getting donors, you're getting grants, you're getting funding, and then you're serving another community. Mm. And there's a tension there of meeting the needs of one community, but being influenced, you know, financially with another, where sometimes you have to say things that are unpopular with your funding group. And I really felt like we need to teach people in our nonprofit spaces to use their voices and to be able to speak up in some of these spaces where they need to.
So with the nonprofits, I guess there's a lot of fundraising going on, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in grants. That's actually how I started my career, was writing grants and getting funding for nonprofit organizations.
Mm-hmm. How difficult is that?
You know, it's interesting. It depends. There's a lot of grant writers that are in my space, and I love this particular group of people. If your organization is really clear on who they are, who they serve, and they have evidence-based strategies to do it, the grants write themselves. The problems that we run into is when we kind of sometimes chase the money and, oh yeah, we'll do this and we'll do this and we can run this program, but we can run that program. And you kind of lose sight of who are you, what matters to you, and what evidence do you have that your strategies that we're going to invest in are actually going to make a difference. And so when you get those questions answered, the grants really do write themselves. And that's actually one of the reasons in my consulting work, I don't do grant writing anymore. I do more of the strategic planning on that side of who are you, what's important to you, and how can you prove that your strategies are making an impact, either with the current population you serve, or if it's, you know, a new project, what evidence out in the world will help reinforce that this is a good strategy, good investment. Mm.
You know, when I always think of like charities, right, or organizations that are nonprofit, one comes to mind, and it was a veterans organization, and they embezzled money. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. And it was such a shame that these people were taking millions of, I think it was $8 million that they took from the foundation. And I'm like, you know, how many people could have truly, the purpose of the organization was to help these people, but somebody pocketed $8 million.
It's so hard to believe that that can happen. Yeah.
But I'm sure it's easy to do because they did it, right?
Yeah.
It's such a shame, because when I look for charity, one of the things I always look at is how much of my dollar goes to the actual cause, right?
Yeah.
For me, that's important.
Absolutely.
And you know, I've raised thousands and thousands of dollars for different charities. And one of the things I'm always looking at, because in the beginning, I didn't know. I just like, that's a good charity. And then later on, I'm like, wait a minute. There's all this money floating around. I'm like, where is it going to the people that I wanted it to go to? I was like, huh. So sometimes I've taken it into my own hands where I've actually, I've done things where I found people during Thanksgiving and I went and I had my whole, at the time, I think I occupied a room. It was a 3,000 square foot of just turkeys.
Oh my goodness.
Thanksgiving. I know it was a lot of turkeys. And it was not just turkeys. We laid it out in a bag. We had turkeys. It was a full dinner for about 6 to 8 people, like 20, 22 pound turkeys, cakes, you know, pies, all the fillings, everything to make a great Thanksgiving dinner. And in each one of those, I believe if I'm recalling now, we also gave them a either $25 or $50 gift card as well. And so we had a room, and thank God for the volunteers that helped out. But it was me raising the money to supply everybody. And then we had volunteers who went and drove it to these people's homes.
Yeah.
And we found these people through schools, through you know, shelters, through churches. And then instead of giving it to the church, we said, we're going to deliver it. We want to make sure it goes to the people who truly need it. And that, man, that was a blessing.
Yeah, in the connection. So to actually say we want to be in community with others and people and serve people directly, I think is a really powerful thing too. You know, we can put our money in charities, but actually forming relationships with people can make such an impact.
Yeah. You know, I personally delivered, I think, 14 or 15 meals myself in my SUV at the time. And 10 of those families were in such dire straits that I went back and I got them all $150. It was Walmart. Because one of the things I found out is with Walmart, you cannot get your money back on a gift card.
Yeah.
So I did that because I didn't want people buying drugs. I don't want people buying liquor, you know, stuff like that. So I said, at least I can go and buy food or clothing or whatever they needed. And one particular family I went to, I had a phone number and I was trying to call them. Hey, we're coming. No answer, no answer. I said, I'm going anyway. They didn't have a phone. That was a phone that they had many years ago. And then what wound up happening is I knocked and it was, you know, Thanksgiving in New York. It's cold, you know, in November. The woman finally answered the phone, the door, and she was wearing a coat, gloves, a scarf, and a hat. And so were her kids. And broke my heart.
Absolutely.
So I gave her this big basket. And then I said, right there, I said, I got to do something for them. So for them, I gave them $300. But I said, will you be here tomorrow? She says, yes. I said, I'll be back. So then I went and I bought all these gift cards for everybody. And a lot of it was my own money because I just felt that these people truly needed something from someone.
Yeah.
And so I went back and I got a $300 gift card. And I went back and then I just gave that to her. And I said, if you ever need, this is my number. I never heard from her, but I know she was super grateful.
Yeah.
So you, and I know I took this in a different direction than I even thought we were going to go, but because of your work, your nonprofit work and how you empower people and you realize that there's a more of a need. And I think that's why you started your JulieBollConsulting.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you wanted to help organizations find better ways, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Would you talk a little bit about what you actually are doing? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So when I started Julie Bull Consulting, I thought that I would just come alongside organizations that needed funding and help them with their grants programs. And I really kind of realized I wanted to spend more space on the side of identifying who this organization is as a whole and what programs align with who they are and what strategies they're going to take forward. So that was where strategic planning came in. And so that's where I spend my space, my time when I work with organizations, nonprofits in particular, is we do strategic planning. We look at who they are as an organization and we identify where they want to go, where they want to have an impact, and what strategies are going to be most important for them to carry forward. Because they're in this ever-changing world and environment that we're all in where, you know, things are constantly changing. So what programs are they going to invest in? What capacity building are they going to do to ensure that they can meet the needs of their beneficiaries, you know, the people they serve? Right. So that's one thing that I do with organizations. And, you know, it's been an evolution in my business, but then I really got into coaching, one-on-one coaching, and doing Dare to Lead work, which is the work of Dr. Brené Brown. And that focuses on the people themselves that make up these organizations and their own leadership capacity, their own belief system, you know, what's important to them, and really empowering the people within the organization so they can strengthen their organizations and, you know, strengthen their impact.
Nice. So, Julie, who is the Dare to Lead workshop for?
Great question. So this is for anyone who considers themselves a leader. And I love Brené's definition of a leader. A leader, according to Brené Brown, is someone who is responsible for people or processes and has the courage to develop this. So when I was in grants, I didn't have anyone that worked for me directly, but I was managing relationships. I was coordinating with faculty members. I was representing the university to outside funders. I was pulling together programs. I was doing all sorts of things to bring in new dollars to the university, but I didn't necessarily consider myself a leader because I didn't have someone under me. But according to this definition, I'm absolutely managing people and processes. I have the courage to develop that. Right. So anybody who's managing people or processes is considered a leader. So I usually work with people who are mid-career. You know, they know who they are, they know what they want to do, they know what kind of an impact they want, but they're looking to make a greater impact with either within the organization they're in now or in a new space. So that's where I tend to reach people in mid-career. And I do predominantly work with people that are in nonprofit organizations or education spaces, just because I think they recognize my background and we talk the same language.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. So if let's say I have a small business, say, you know, 20 employees, would it make sense for me personally to come to your workshop? And would it make sense for me to bring maybe I have two or three managers to bring them along?
Absolutely. Actually, I've done this Dare to Lead workshop with entire organizations where everybody comes to the table. And no matter where you are in the organization, we're empowering you and your own development journey to grow. So yes, sometimes we'll see people bring their leadership team with them. And sometimes we'll bring an entire organization through.
Cool.
The red flag for me is when someone that has the team of 20 says, I want to send my team through, and they don't actually go through themselves. It's a huge red flag because you're asking your people to come in and really dig in and do their own work, and you're not doing your work. There's a disconnect here, and there's going to be a problem when they do the work and they start raising the questions they need to raise, and you haven't done the work.
You know, that brings up a good question. Do you even take them on?
No, absolutely not. Not if the person at the top. If the person at the top doesn't come to the table, we don't. I don't anyway.
Mm-mm. Yeah, that right there shows integrity on your part. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So many people, and you said it before, people are looking at the dollar bill, right? Or the euro bill, whatever it is, wherever you are in the world, right? And when we want to impact the world, we can't look at it that way. So I'm glad that if the leader is not coming, then why? I bother with anybody else, because it should all stem from the top, right? And a lot of people think it goes from the top down, but also a lot of times the smart leaders know it comes from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. Because how can you lead someone if you don't know the process yourself?
Exactly. And the GRD League work really works hand in hand with culture change. So as you start learning a new language, as you start using new tools, new phrases, new concepts, the way you interact with each other in the work environment changes. And the way that you serve the people that you serve changes as well. Right. So you can't have that if you don't have all levels, you know, speaking this language and practicing and using these tools.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. It's important to also to the communication with leaders and their employees or the people they're leading, right? One of the things that when I'm training, new trainers or coaches or whoever it is I'm training, I let them know that if they can't follow, they can't lead,
right? Yeah.
So that to me is a critical aspect to being a great leader.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah, it needs to go both ways. You need to be able to listen and then also when appropriately, yeah, both ways.
So what are some of the topics that you cover at your workshops, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, no, I love talking about it. So the curriculum is all about courage building, and Brené breaks it down into four different skill sets. The first one is rumbling with vulnerability. So learning what vulnerability is and isn't, you know, it's not oversharing. Vulnerability is willing to sit in the discomfort of not knowing what's coming. So we talk a lot about what vulnerability is and how to manage the physiology of that. How do you sit with the discomfort of vulnerability? How do you enter into a conversation with someone when you don't know what the outcome's going to be? But the second skill set is my favorite. It's living into your values. So we get really clear on what our personal values are and how we want to intentionally live within those values. And actually, I do standalone workshops on that topic in particular, because I feel like if I can arm people with their own values and that self-discovery and that knowledge, they can take it and just do all kinds of things with it. They can guide their career changes around it. They can guide their boundaries, what they will and won't do around those values. So we spend time really getting clear on what your personal value is. We talk about braving trust, what trust looks like, and specific elements that build trust or erode trust. And the last piece is, what's it called? It's about resilience. Learning to rise is what she calls it. But what happens when you're brave and you do something hard and you basically fall on your face? How do you get back up? What are the stories you're telling yourself in that moment? And so we try to help people get clear on like the stories they make up in their mind and challenge those stories, which is really clear, like really similar to what I do in one-on-one coaching too, is what's coming up? What's that story that you've got in your mind? And what's the reality? What's real? What's true? So she puts it into a 24-hour curriculum, and we spend, when we're in person, we'll spend 3 days on it. If we're virtual, we'll do it over 8 weeks. And we just dig into these topics, and we do a lot of one-on-one conversations with peers talking to one another about the topics. And they do a lot of self-discovery around what are my triggers? What are the things that kind of put me into a tailspin, and how can I recognize them so that I can stay in my integrity in this work environment? We think emotions happen in our personal lives. They happen at work. They drive all kinds of unhelpful behavior in the workplace.
Yeah. I love the courage aspect of it, right? Because just showing up is part of the courage as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And you talk about triggers and all these things. You're right. Wherever you go, your emotions will determine how you act as well.
Yes, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And I don't know, I think Brené really found a space in this leadership market to talk about emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think of leadership programming, you think of how to do things and how to be a leader and how to supervise and all of that. But she works on how to manage your own internal storytelling and your own physiology when you get, you know, triggered by shame. She talks about shame a lot, or vulnerability. How do you actually handle that experience that you have physically when it happens?
Yeah, that's huge. And a lot of people are, they don't do that work on themselves.
No, not at all.
Right. And it doesn't matter the age. I mean, you can have somebody who's 70 and they still haven't done that work.
Absolutely. I think you're more likely to have someone that's 70 and hasn't done that work just because of generational things and culture things. We were all taught that you don't talk about your feelings, especially as the older you get, the more less likely you are to be comfortable with that.
Yeah. And that's where that shame comes in, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, shame has, or even guilt has, stopped people from becoming great.
And absolutely. Absolutely.
It's such a shame.
Yes. So shame, she breaks down the difference between shame and guilt. Shame is, I am bad. Guilt is, I did something bad. And there's a really big difference there, because if I am bad, I can't fix it. There's nothing I can do about it. But if I did something bad, there's something I can do about it. So guilt potentially has the power to affect change, where shame never does. Shame is always what's going to keep us small, keep us from trying things, keep us from speaking up, keep us from having boundaries that we need to be healthy, all those things.
Sounds like you have incredible workshops.
I love the work. I love the work. It's interesting because you can't teach this without using your own stories and sharing your own vulnerability. So they are incredibly life-giving and they're incredibly exhausting to give too. So I have to like build in time just to process and decompress after we do a workshop, because I'm giving part of myself as well.
Right. I think you would be great at our event coming up in New York, Heroes Rising Apex. That one is coming up July 13th through the 16th.
Yes.
Because we're going to have so many different leaders there, different coaches, authors, people from all over the world coming. And when we think about impacting people, and a lot of people don't seek the help that they truly need, they don't seek a coach. That's why I started Coaching Call, because I believe in coaching so much.
Yes, yes.
That to me, a lot of people, when they first heard of the show, they're like, oh, it's a sports show. Like, no, it's not. What do you mean, no, it's not? So, well, who taught you how to play piano? Who taught you how to read? Who taught you how to, you know, ride a bicycle? Who taught you all these different things? You know, who taught you how to swim? Whatever it is that you've been taught, there was a coach. Maybe they were called coach. Maybe they were called mom. Maybe they were called dad. Maybe they were called your friend or your sibling. Everyone has the capability of teaching someone else.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead.
I love sort of the difference between like a coach and a mentor and a therapist. Like there's all these people that are in these helping roles, but I see coaching as walking with people, you know, and, you know, reflecting things back to them and just walking with. And not necessarily teaching, but just being on a journey with other people as they're doing hard things.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, it's when you talked about being with people, and it reminded me of that image where you see footprints, right? On the sand. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do. Yeah.
And the gentleman is talking to God, and he says, you know, where were you? And the real message is, who do you think, whose footprints do you think those are? I was carrying you that whole time.
Yeah.
So we have to also understand that there is a higher being, whether we want to admit it or not, because the other day I was driving, and when I drive, I don't necessarily listen to the radio. I'm always, to me, it's my university on wheels. And one of the messages was, there has to be a higher being, because even the complexity of a tree, who created that? You know, the complexity of an animal, of a creature, of a human being, the rise and the fall of the sun, the universe, everything. There is a higher being who has brought this about, because who created a plant? Who created a strawberry? You know, it's so complex.
Yes.
Meanwhile, you know, I don't know if that's the Big Bang theory, because there's too many theories in there if you think about it, you know. So, you know, I am a person who believes in God, of a higher being. But for me, that has taught me to be more heart-centered and to realize that you, me, and everyone else is a beautiful soul, and that we need to treat each other with respect and love and admiration. You know, a lot of people, I realized when I was a young boy, I was very selfish because I thought the world revolved around me, right? And then I realized that it did, because it's my world, right? But you have your world. That's the realization I got. But we live in a combined world. And when I got that, I was like, oh my God, that's an aha moment for me, because I was right as a kid that, I live in my world, but so does she, so does he, so do they. And guess what? Now we share a world together. So I need to make my world as beautiful as I can, but I can't damage my world, because then how am I going to live in the world that you're in?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that collective living, if you will, right?
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's just me in a nutshell.
I like that. What an aware thing to realize as a young kid.
Yeah, you know, in most kids, you know, let's talk about teenagers. They all know everything.
Absolutely.
You can't tell.
I'm sure
you and I were the same.
Yeah.
I had to. Now I have one who's 18 and the other one's 22.
Yep.
But, you know, there was a time you could not say a thing to them.
Yes.
Because they knew everything. So you have two, huh? Good for you.
I do. How old are they? So I have 15 and 18. And I still have a 9-year-old who
thinks
that I know things. So, yeah, it does change. It does. And I remember I miss sometimes the conviction I had when I was younger. You know, how clear I was. Am I right? Am I wrong? And what I believed. And I think some of that's starting to come back now, but you just go out into the world and you see new things, you learn new things, you question things. And it takes a while to kind of get back to that.
It does. You know, seeing that clear with those clear lenses, if you will, you know, when you talked about seeing things, I started imagining like shades of gray, right? When the truth has so many sides to it, because it depends on the person who's seeing it, or even the way it's spelled out, or the vision, or the way it's spoken. So there are so many different shades to the truth or a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to decipher. It's a lot to take in this crazy world. Currently, we are in a crazy world. But I am glad I am here now, you know.
Yeah.
As crazy as it is, I'm happy to be alive today.
Amen. Me too.
Yes.
Me too.
What is one advice that you would give to somebody who is looking for a coach? Not that they want to be a coach. They need a coach. They need to come see Julie.
Yeah.
Before we even answer that one, who's your avatar?
Who's my avatar? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I have never been asked that question. That might give
You're
me
welcome.
To I might have to think about that a little bit to have an answer. How would you answer that question? I'm just curious.
It's the people I want to serve.
The people you want to serve. Okay, so
who is it that I want to help?
Yes.
As a consultant, as a coach, as a mentor,
Thank
who
you
do
for
I
me.
Want to, because my audience is, you know, late 20s to early 50s. But that's one set of audience. Then I have a different set of audience where they're 3 years old and up. And so I have to wear many different hats. And yeah. So I also have to understand the communication is going to be different if I'm talking to an 8-year-old or a 4-year-old. That communication is way different. Yeah. Or sometimes a 2-year-old, because it's different. Yesterday, you know, I also run a martial arts school, and I'm teaching class, and there's a woman holding a baby, beautiful baby. And I looked at her and I go, whose baby's that? She goes, oh, it's my sister's friend. I'm holding it for the day. And I went over, and the baby just looked at me and put her hands out. I was like, oh, come over here. And yes. I just picked her up, and she was under one, but she wanted to go on the floor and be part of the class.
Yeah.
And so she was struggling to get out of everybody's arm because she wanted to be part of the activities. And then we have other kids who don't want anything with it. So it's all that, the involvement that they want to get into. And then it's the approach of how we communicate, right? So that baby noticed that, hey, you know what? I want that guy to hold me because I can see he's okay, right? Mm-hmm. So it's that comfort, that secure feeling. And then if I'm talking to a 3 or 4-year-old, it's, I'm 6'1". If I stay tall the whole time, they're like, who's that giant, right?
Exactly.
So I have to get down to their eye level to communicate better with them. And, you know, it's got fist bumps and high fives. And you know, I put my hand like this really fast so that they can try to hit it. So I make fun and games with them. And then when I talk to 8-year-olds, I'm asking them how was school, all these different things. And obviously, I'm not going to talk to a 34-year-old and say, how was school? I'm going to say, how was your job? How's everything? You know, I understand you're going through this, whatever it is. So we have to change who we're talking to at that point. And being that I help all levels of people, it's really interesting. So I always say this, that when I grow up, I'm going to get a job.
Yeah. Well, that means you're living in your purpose. I think when you truly are doing your work that you're meant to do, it doesn't feel like a job. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. So now you get the avatar deal?
I do. Thank you for that. So, you know, it's interesting. I didn't intentionally fall into coaching women, but that's who I've attracted. And I really love coaching women. I do coach solopreneurs. So they're self-employed and they're the only one in their business. I do a lot of that. And that brings me a lot of joy. I've been on that path. I know that path. And then I also really enjoy supporting nonprofit leaders and education leaders. So that's really the person that I tend to do the most work with and I think have the greatest impact with. So those are kind of my people. Mm. So, yeah.
Got it. So I'm thinking that you are probably coaching people mid-20s to 40s?
Yeah. No, I definitely... In the career span of, yes, early career to mid to late career. So I would say probably 30 to 50 is where I tend to land. You know, you've been around the block a little bit. You know what space you want to be in. You have some ideas about what's important to you. And you want to push forward and push your impact and grow your impact. So,
Nice. So one of the things that you talked earlier was about rising, right? And so that's why we're having the Heroes Rising Apex, because we are having so many different coaches who are going to help people. And this is what, you know, I started Heroes Rising because I always thought that all these coaches that I was talking to on this show were amazing. Like you, you're amazing at what you do and the work you're doing. I love it. And you're impacting the world. And so I said, that's why I started Heroes Rising. And then I said, every one of these people to me is a hero, right? So I see coaches. Now, don't get me wrong. When I started, the reason I started coaching call is because during the pandemic, the beginning of it, I was getting 1,000 emails a day
goodness.
By my program, you know, and meanwhile, they just became a coach the day before.
Yeah.
And I was like, who are you? What are you? You don't even know what you're talking about. And so that's why I started, because I wanted to bring real coaches who've been doing the work and to let people know that there are real coaches out there, and to for me to help promote them, because I believe in coaching so much. And then I said, wow, if I can take all these heroes and bring them to one place and bring them together. And then, so I always see everyone as a hero. So to some people are just heroes in waiting, right? So what is your advice for somebody who is looking for a coach?
Yes, I'm glad we circled back to that. One thing that I learned in the coaching journey is you can have a one-on-one call with someone you're interested in coaching with, just like a chemistry session, just to see how do you connect? What is it like? What's the conversation like? So please, you know, as you're exploring coaching and considering people, do that introduction call. It doesn't cost you any money. It's for both you and the coach that's going to serve you, because they have the same needs you do. They want to make sure it's a good fit for them as well. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to do is take someone that I don't think I can help, because that's just going to hurt us both. So definitely take advantage of that. And I think people, especially in this nonprofit education space, it's not normalized to have a coach. And so it's sort of a, you see it in executive, large companies will hire coaches, and it's more of a common thing. But I don't see it as much in the nonprofit spaces and the education spaces. So just trusting that if you feel that you would benefit from a coach, that it is incredibly, incredibly helpful in those spaces as well.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've seen some amazing coaches who switch careers. What I mean by that is a lot of teachers have left teaching because they realize that maybe, and I don't even want to get into the school system because it's truly broken, right?
And it's a hard place to be.
So when we think about the education system, and so a lot of great teachers are there, and sometimes they're not valued as much as they should be. I truly believe that they're not paid enough.
Absolutely.
You know, for all these different things. And, you know, a lot of people get into teaching because in the beginning they think, oh, I get summers off. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever think I want to do a job if I think I'm going to, because I get time off. I want to do a job because I want to impact. I want to make a difference. And so I even think that, to be honest, wouldn't it be something incredible if teachers worked instead of, you know, from September to June, if they worked from January to November and then maybe got December off, and then during the summertime, or, you know, you got this 3-day work week that people are starting to do. And I think it's a really good idea, or 4-day work week where they have, let's consider a 4-day work week where some people in certain businesses, they're starting to do, and it's working well. They have to be there for their customers 5 days a week. So they say, okay, so we have 20 employees, 10 employees work Monday through Thursday this week, and next week they'll work Tuesday through Friday.
Right.
And what a great, and that's what the pandemic did. It brought about that change, that thought process of like, wait a minute, we can still pay you the same amount and get more out of you, and you don't have to work the 40 hours.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think that's being beautiful.
Self-employed, you kind of realize that a lot of your time when you're internal and you're working for somebody else gets kind of eaten up by things that aren't outcome producing. And so I realized I can work a 6-hour day and accomplish what I was accomplishing in an 8-hour day, because there's not as much of that, like, you know, sidebar conversation. You know, I'm really efficient when I work on my own. So yeah, I think that that did really come to light with the pandemic, as people realize we don't have to necessarily fit in this box.
We're out of the box now.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
And, you know, we got to think and be thankful, even for the things that hurt us, right? The pandemic hurt us, but it also helped us. It guided us. So I always see the good in the bad.
Yeah.
I guess I'm optimistic, right? When it comes to things like that, even during the pandemic, people are like, oh, this is terrible. And I'm like, it's a reset. It's a reset. You have to reset your computer every so often, right? You have to update. So it was basically, don't get me wrong, it was horrendous. We lost so many people, great people. But in reality, it's a reset, right? That we maybe need it. And some people are going to hate me for what I just said. But hey, it is what it is, right? We have no control of certain things in life. We just have to roll with the punches, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do think there was a silver lining. Interestingly enough, before the pandemic, we couldn't facilitate Brené Brown's work virtually. It was against the curriculum guidelines. And when the pandemic hit, that had to change. You know, a lot of things had to change that were very rigid. And so I do work all over the country now because everybody's used to virtual. And so for me as a business owner, it brought me opportunity, you know? So yeah, there is definitely some positives that have come from it too.
I mean, let's not misunderstand that some people made way too much money during the pandemic.
Oh, right? Sure.
Way too much. Let's talk about Amazon for, I'm just kidding. But right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there was a lot of companies that were born because of it.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely.
A lot of companies. Coaching Call was born because of it.
Yeah. A lot of podcasts. Yes, definitely.
A lot of podcasts. But I needed, because of all the emails I was getting, initially I was going to do a martial arts podcast.
Oh, interesting.
I still haven't done a martial arts podcast.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense. I've been in martial arts going on 48 years, and it would have made sense. But I said, there's something bigger out there. There's a bigger calling. And when I started getting all these emails, I was like, that's it. That's the calling. Let me talk to real coaches like you. So thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. And a big shout out to Dustin for introducing us. And I'm so happy. I think we need you in New York come July.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing that information with me. It does sound lovely.
Great. So then we'll see you there.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. And anything that you'd like to share before we sign off?
Thank you for sharing the website on the bottom of the screen there.
Sure.
Anybody who's interested in Dare to Lead, there's a website called daretoleadworkshop.com. And I would just encourage you to go see what the opportunities are coming up. And there's facilitators from all over the country doing this work. It's really beautiful, valuable work. And I encourage everybody to explore it.
Yeah. So one more question I have for you. So I like what you said, that you should resonate with a coach.
Yes.
And that to me is super important, because if there's friction, man, there's no work to be done.
Absolutely.
So you do that. You do like an introductory call with someone just to make sure that you're even happy with them, right?
Yes, absolutely. We ask, you know, what do you want to get out of coaching? If we're successful at the end of this, what's going to change? What's going to look different? And yeah, I start asking any of the questions I would ask in a normal start of a relationship, I'll ask in that discovery chemistry session. And, you know, everyone's style is different. You know, some people are more direct, some people are less, you know, and you just get a sense for who this is that's going to be supporting you.
Yeah, because you're going to spend time with them.
And you're going to be sharing, you know, you're going to have to be vulnerable in that relationship in order to really benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here today. Don't go away. We're going to talk for a second, but we're going to say goodbye to everybody.
All right. Thanks.
All right. You got it.